Hi, everyone. My name's Maria, and I stand here today as a COVID survivor. As all of you, I'm sure, would agree, we have lived through the biggest con in history of our time over the last 3 years. In December 2021, the South Australian government considered me to be the most dangerous living woman in the state. I know, I look the part, don't I? Saying that, I put the whole state at risk despite never having laboured under an infectious disease. And to this day, never had COVID. It was simply because of my refusal to take part in an experimental jab, which we now know to be the biggest scam in history. The biggest human experiment. Just recently, AstraZeneca, as Tricky already mentioned, admitted publicly that they are withdrawing their vaccine from the market because it's causing serious side effects. Just to remind you all, this is the same vaccine that the government told us was safe, effective, and free. Now, which of those promises did they meet? None. Now, you're probably thinking, so what happened to this dangerous living woman standing here today? In December 2021, I was a healthy 30-year-old woman who contributed to society, had a career, life aspirations, a partner, and no criminal history. But apparently, that was a crime. Because that year, I was maliciously stalked by South Australian police, arrested and imprisoned, where I spent 2 weeks in solitary confinement at the women's prison. Fun fact, the day that I was arrested, South Australia reported 0 new cases. It was deadly to be alive, a deadly time to be alive. It all started when I was returning back to South Australia from Uluru, and my mum and I were denied entry into South Australia because they had closed their borders to unvaccinated residents. The irony was that vaccinated international travellers were allowed into the state. A few years back, who would have thought that travelling between borders would be considered a crime, particularly for those choosing to maintain their bodily autonomy? So we were told by South Australia police to drive back to the Northern Territory in the dark. Being two strong Ukrainian women, we refused to do so and offered South Australia police to pitch our tent and become their personal liability. Lucky we did, because that day NT announced a hard border closure to all non-NT residents.
The Northern Territory will lock down its borders as it seeks to prevent the spread of COVID-19. Matt Cunningham is in Darwin and joins me now live. Matt, the Chief Minister has just made this announcement. How will it work?
Well, Danica, police roadblocks will be set up on the three main highways into the Northern Territory, the Victoria Highway from Western Australia, the Barkly Highway from Queensland, and the Stuart Highway from South Australia. From 4 p.m. on Tuesday, everyone who comes through there will be checked and they'll be told to self-isolate. Here's how the Chief Minister, Michael Gunner, made this announcement just a short time ago.
I promised Territorians I would do whatever it takes to protect them, and I meant it. This morning, the Commissioner and I have agreed on a plan to secure the Northern Territory's borders. From 4 p.m. on Tuesday, the 24th of March, the Northern Territory will implement strict border controls for all access points by road, rail, air and sea. From 4 p.m. on Tuesday, people who arrive in the Northern Territory from interstate will be required to quarantine for 14 days.
So essentially, we were stuck in no man's land. This is a very similar parallel to Nazi Germany, where you leave one country, but you're never allowed to enter another country, and you're not allowed to go back to the country that you left. We reminded this to the two police officers on duty at the border. This thought provoked the police and made them feel uncomfortable and alarmed about the fact that Marla Checkpoint was soon going to become a refuge to the unvaccinated. So we were finally granted an exemption on compassionate grounds to return back to our own home in South Australia. I'll never forget the neon yellow sign as we entered South Australia saying, "Unvaccinated residents, no entry." Whilst the police vehicles said, "Keeping SA safe." How is sending two women back to a different state in pitch black with no accommodation booked safe? How is driving for 15 hours and being told that you must proceed to your home and not allowed to stop anywhere safe? How is driving in the torrential rain at 10 p.m. safe? And now the biggest question of all, how is taking an experimental death jab to return back to your homes as an Australian citizen safe? So you're probably wondering, what happened to this dangerous living woman? Well, upon returning back to Adelaide, for the next 2 weeks, I had police coming to our home almost every day, sometimes three times a day. We were placed under indefinite home arrest and threatened on a daily basis for not agreeing to consent to any medical experiments. We had SA police jump over our 1.5 metre tall fence, threaten to shoot the dogs, peer through the bedroom windows, knock on all the windows setting the dogs off, endless calls from no caller IDs, SA police visiting my workplace and coercing staff to disclose private information about me. They even went to such great lengths as going to my Christmas party for work and advising the hotel staff to call them if I attended and leaving call cards with the neighbours in the hope to arrest me. It's hard to believe that all of this happened in this day and age, in that space of 2 weeks. But as we sadly know, history repeats itself. And boy, did the chilling effects of the plandemic remind us of what we truly stand for, what we value, and what we will not tolerate. On the 5th of December, 2021, I was pulled over and arrested. I had five male police officers attend a crime scene and surround my car to intimidate and harass me. At this point, I still couldn't understand what crime I had committed. Where is the victim? Who did I harm? Where was the warrant for my arrest? And if there was no warrant, what indictable crime could I assist the police with? By the way, these are all legitimate questions to ask and demand to have answered if you are ever pulled up by the police. It turns out that the crime was committed against me, because I was not able to get an answer to any of those questions. And instead, I was sent to the city watch house, refused bail, denied an interview, and I was listed to appear in court the next day. I was put next to a cell next to murderers, rapists, drug traffickers, and domestic violence abusers. Sadly, I was terribly misrepresented by my lawyer, and following this hearing, I was loaded with charges and sent to the women's prison with an indefinite term. However, being sent to prison without a conviction sounds highly unusual, doesn't it? Well, believe me, it was, especially for an alleged offence for which the highest possible penalty was a $1,000 fine. But somehow that didn't apply to me. I spent the next 2 days in solitary confinement and was denied the opportunity to go outside, see my family and friends who wanted to visit me, encouraged to take sleeping pills and antidepressants, and coerced to take medical experiments if I ever wanted to see the sun again. It's safe to say it's not an experience that I ever wish upon anyone, especially not someone who has a clean record with no criminal history and has been a contributing member to the society. The same day that I was in prison, South Australia's drug trafficker was released on bail, with no sentencing by the same judge who heard my matter. And boy, did the prison officers put on a show for me. As soon as I arrived, hazmat suits came out. Goggles, gloves. But this happened after I'd already been exchanged by about a dozen different prison staff and shared a room with another girl. Of course, the virus was so deadly, even those that didn't have it could spread it. And you know what was unlimited in prison? Big pharma drugs and mainstream media television. What a surprise. After having been denied bail three times and appealing to the highest court in the state, I was finally released on home detention with an ankle monitor. Because remember, I'm still a dangerous living woman at this point. So dangerous, I had no criminal history. Can you only imagine how unsafe South Australians felt? For the next 1 year and a half, I had 20 court hearings, 3 bail amendments, 13 different magistrates, and 2 Supreme Court judges, 12 police witnesses testifying against me, and a 3-day listed trial. It's safe to say that most of 22 was spent in court and the fight for justice began. I knew that the only way that I would win this case was not to be part of the system. So I fired my lawyer, who was not acting in my best interest, and decided to self-represent until the end. That was one of the best decisions that I made. One thing that a wise friend once taught me, you must use their system against them. And to this day, there is no facts and evidence that I was ever labouring under an infectious disease, neither from the police or SA Health. Always remember that they have to prove the case against you and not the other way around, even though unfortunately the system doesn't necessarily work that way, but you have to still remind them of that. It was evident that South Australian police and the judiciary colluded with each other to make me a political prisoner. This was a clear abuse of the power by South Australia police. All my charges were fabricated, and it was a case of malicious prosecution, false arrest, and unlawful imprisonment. They wanted to make an example out of me and scare everyone else from attempting to challenge the system, or in my defence, to simply live as a free woman, free from coercion, free from medical death experiments, and to be free to travel between states in our beautiful country that we once used to call the land of the free. So how did this traumatic reality end for this no longer living free woman at that point in time? Well, on the 15th of March 2023, marked a day of victory for me. South Australia Police withdrew all my charges and abandoned the matter. The magistrate acquitted me from this case and I was finally free from any criminal charges. At last, I was free to travel, free to apply for work, free to move on with my life again as a young woman after being deprived of my liberty for the last year and a half. Despite the police never admitting fault, I won my battle for freedom. But SA Police only agreed to pay me a measly $550 for all my time spent in court. Although this was a long and difficult journey, one thing I can say is that if you stand by the truth always wins in the end. But at what human cost? This case took a year and a half of my life away. It ended my relationship, alienated my friendships, tarnished my reputation, demoted my career, and broke my family. One thing I can say, that it will not break me. I'm forever grateful for the people who stood by me, including Simon, Peter, Darren, and many more, and especially to my mum for her endless efforts. She was also threatened to be arrested by the police when I was in custody. As a mother or a parent, I'm sure you know how that would feel if your children were in the same position. I think the experience for her was much more stressful and horrific than it was for me. Now, as we all stand here today, I understand I'm more likely already appealing and preaching to the converted, or sadly, perhaps some vaccine-injured people today. But here's a very important message that I'd like to convey, and that is that we must stand up and exercise our rights against government corruption.
They lie, the men who tell us, for reasons of their own. Want is here a stranger, misery's unknown. Where the nearest suburb and the city proper meet, thy windowsill is level with the faces in the street. Drifting past to the beat of weary feet. I sorrow for the owners of the places in the street. And cause I have to sorrow in a land so young and fair. See upon those faces the marks of wanton care. And I look in vain for traces of the fresh and fair and sweet, in the sallow sunken faces that are drifting through the street. Drifting on to the scrape of restless feet. I sorrow for the owners of the faces in the street. And I wonder, would the apathy of wealthy men endure? Were all their windows level with the faces of the poor? Our mammon slaves, your knees shall knock, your heart in terror beat. When your God demands a reason for the sorrows of the street. The wrong things and the bad things, and the sad things that we meet, in the filthy lane and alley, and the cruel and heartless street. And I cried, O God Almighty, does still endure. Now show me in a vision for the wrongs of earth to cure. And lo, with shops all shuttered, I saw a city street. And in the warning distance heard the tramp of many feet. Pouring on to a drum's loud threatening beat. And the war hymns and the cheering of the people in the street. So it must be, while the world goes rolling round its course, the warning pen shall write in vain. Warning voice grow hoarse, and kindle eyes all blazing bright, revolution's heat, and flashing swords reflecting Richard's faces in the street. Coming near, with drums dull distant beat. Then I saw the army, and it was marching down the street.